Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
This episode contains descriptions of violence and sexual assault. Use your best judgment. In 1981, Susan Shoemake was a 21-year-old college student at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale. As a radio and broadcast major, it only made sense that she worked at the local radio station, WIDB. Susan earned a promotion quickly, and on May 18th, she would begin her new position as a sales executive. On May 17th, Susan left her dorm room in Wright Hall to attend a meeting at the station. She headed down a path known as the Ho Chi Minh Trail, a shortcut that a lot of students used. The trail led through a grassy knoll, past some railroad tracks, and continued on by the university's physical plant. Susan didn't make it to the end of the shortcut that day. She didn't make it to the meeting. And she didn't start her new position on May 18th. Because Susan met someone on the trail that day. The person responsible for her murder. From A&E, this is Cold Case Files. I'm Brooke, and here's the spectacular Bill Curtis with a classic case, Exhuming the Truth.
On August 17, 1981, I'd been a Carbondale police officer for 1 week. That's the same day that Susan Shoemake was murdered. Susan and I had a class in one of the buildings behind me here.
In 1981, Paul Eccles is 21 years old. The rape and murder of a local co-ed named Susan Shoemake marks his second week on the job.
I actually was in the police training at 1 week. I got hired 1 week to the day before she was murdered. It was a scary thing here. It was the first time ever that I'm aware of that an SIU student was murdered on campus.
Her murder shook the campus. And little I know that 23 years later, I would arrest her killer.
One of her friends called me up there to tell me that they couldn't find Sue. I knew that they felt something wasn't right.
John Shoemake is Susan's older brother. On August 18th, he gets a call. His sister is missing from the campus of Southern Illinois University.
She was supposed to meet a friend they were going to have dinner together, and she didn't show up, and that's when they knew something was amiss.
As John Shoemake and his parents drive to Carbondale, a campus-wide search for Susan is underway.
And I kept trying to reassure them and tell them, oh, she's with a friend, don't worry about it, I'm sure she's okay. And I don't know at what point I stopped believing that.
Well, this is known as Thompson Woods. There's footpaths and trails that have been through here for years, some of them lighted, some of them not, and it was common for students to cut through when traveling across campus.
Hank Beneke is a student police officer for the university, one of a half dozen who scout the area.
Obviously, you can see that it's a lot of undergrowth, so that is what we were asked to do, to start just walking the footpaths and searching through the woods as best we could.
Just before midnight, searchers discover Susan's body, just off a campus shortcut called the Ho Chi Minh Trail.
Cause of death was strangulation. Now, there was no ligature mark, so you're probably talking manual strangulation.
Frank Cooper is a crime scene tech with the Illinois State Police. He's called out to the Ho Chi Minh Trail and the body of Susan Shoemake.
After we turned her over, then she had obvious injuries to her face. She had a cut lip, bruises on her face, so she had been hit hard and hit several times. The guy that did this was an animal. That's all you could say about him.
If you're tired of outdated at-home color, then Madison Reed is what you've been looking for. Get gorgeous professional hair color delivered to your door starting at $22. Treat yourself or someone you know this holiday season by going to madison-reed.com and using code CCF to get 10% off plus free shipping on that first color kit. It's crafted by master colorists who blend nuances of light, dark, cool, and warm tones to create over 55 gorgeous, multidimensional shades. So many Madison Reed clients comment on how their new hair color has improved their lives. Women love the results. Gorgeous, shiny, multidimensional, healthy-looking hair. This is game-changing color you can do at home. And look as if you just came from the salon. This holiday season, treat your hair to what it deserves with Madison Reed. Go to madison-reed.com and use code CCF to get 10% off plus free shipping on that first color kit. That's madison-reed.com and use code CCF. It's doorbell season, the busiest time of year at your front door. With Ring, you can monitor all the hustle and bustle, no matter where you are, right from your phone. If someone stops by or something's going on, Ring lets you know, and you can see and speak to whoever's at your doorstep. Get it for yourself or as a gift for a loved one this holiday season at ring.com/coldcase. And you'll receive special Black Friday and Cyber Monday offers. Ring has everything you need to keep an eye on your home this holiday season and throughout the year. I love the video doorbell. It gives me a sense of security and lets me conveniently answer the door right from my phone. You can keep an eye on every corner of your house with easy-to-install indoor and outdoor cameras. Plus, the Ring Alarm is a powerful, affordable, whole-home security system you can easily install yourself. For a limited time, go to ring.com/coldcase to receive special Black Friday and Cyber Monday offers. That's ring.com/coldcase.
At autopsy, the ME determined Susan was raped, and semen is collected. Her body is released for burial, and Susan's family feels the cold hand of murder touch their very soul.
I'll never forget that night. It was just, it was awful. You know, just realizing that she had been murdered, it was just impossible. And I was just crying, and, you know, what else could I do?
Once Ms. Shoemake was found and the circumstances surrounding her death were known, the community was obviously alarmed, and the police wanted to solve it as quickly as possible. So the police used all their resources to try and solve this.
One name surfaces as an immediate suspect. A man named John Paul Phillips has already served time for kidnapping and is considered a suspect in two local deaths. Even better, police could actually place him on campus at the time of the disappearance.
It was determined that John Paul Phillips was working right here at the women's gym back then. They were doing some repair work on it, and it turned out that he was working here, very near proximity of where the body was found, down the way, a little distance. So that right there put him in the neighborhood and was just one more indicator that maybe he was the right person.
Phillips is questioned. His interview only heightens an already significant sense of suspicion.
There were some things that were learned during the interview that made him look still even more viable as a suspect. Some odd scratches on him and some, wishy-washy alibi and so on and so forth. And so the detectives gave him a good hard look.
Phillips, however, is not the only name on police radar, as new evidence places a second suspect even closer to the crime scene.
This is the evidence room of the Southern Illinois University Police Department. This is where Daniel Willison's tote bag was stored after it was recovered.
Days after Susan Shoemake was murdered, just blocks from the crime scene, a bag was found containing prescription drugs, but not the kind issued at your local drugstore.
The prescription was filled at the Menard Correctional Institution in Chester, Illinois. And that caused a red flag to come up.
The name on the prescription bottle is Daniel Willison, a paroled con who was working less than a mile from the murder site. Willison moves to the top of the suspect list for Detective McGee.
This is the King's Inn. Looks like it's pretty well abandoned now. Detective Hopkins and I came here to contact Daniel Willison, and we wanted to talk to him, really, about the murder that had been committed on the campus. He was smoking heavy,
He wouldn't make eye contact when we talked to him. Just seemed to be nervous. In fact, you could see he was visibly shaken.
Wollison claims he is innocent. Detectives leave but return to the King's Inn the next day. Wollison, however, is gone. In a wastebasket, Detective McGee finds the remnants of a letter.
I don't understand why it's always me. I know I can't handle prison again, so I know everyone is better off this way. My only regret is hurting my family. If my brother wants anything that I've got, that's who I want to have it. He signs a note, "Sorry, Dan."
McGee believes Wollison to be his killer. 2 months later, the detective finds his suspect sitting in the Joliet Penitentiary, picked up on a parole violation.
Well, Detective Hopkins and I went to Joliet, and we interrogated him. All he would say is, "I didn't do it." We were sure that when we went there, we could turn him around and get a confession out of him. And when we couldn't, we were very disappointed.
Without a confession, the trail on Wollison runs cold. Meanwhile, the case grows more complex as two more young women are attacked near the SIU campus. In November, 30-year-old Joan Weatherall is raped and bludgeoned to death. Then in December, a female student is abducted and raped. She escapes and fingers a familiar suspect as her attacker.
We'd had three murders of young co-eds, and we could put him near the scene of every one of them. So when this one came along, we tried the same scenario. Was John Paul near here? Yes, he was working 200 yards away every day. So in my opinion, he was a good suspect.
John Paul Phillips is convicted in the November and December attacks. And while there is no physical evidence to link Phillips directly to Susan Shoemake's murder, Susan's family marks him down as Susan's killer.
We were firmly convinced that John Paul Phillips was the man who killed Susan. So we thought this has to be the guy.
20 years later, however, a cop named Eccles finds suspicion and guilt are two very different things.
Many smart people thought John Paul Phillips did it. So that became the first step in this. Let's either identify or let's eliminate John Paul Phillips.
How do you give the man in your life an awesome gift? By handing him a crowbar, a man crate, and saying, "Have at it." Right now, check out the endless selection at mancrates.com/coldcase. Our producer Steve enjoyed the rustic experience of the cozy winter cocktail crate, which included two personalized Irish coffee glasses, now adorned with his initials, Kudu coffee, and bourbon barrel-aged maple syrup for a delightful morning Irish coffee, bourbon black tea and ginger-infused honey for an evening hot toddy, and the hot buttered rum and cinnamon sticks, fit for a log cabin king. He also had fun opening the box with a crowbar. Show the guy in your life that you really care with hundreds of totally unique gift options available at mancrates.com. And every ManCrate gift comes with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Check out an endless selection of personalized gifts the guys in your life will love and their best discounts available at mancrates.com/coldcase. That's mancrates.com/coldcase. mancrates.com/coldcase.
Support for today's episode comes from Progressive Insurance. Fun fact, Progressive customers qualify for an average of 6 discounts when they sign up for Progressive Auto Insurance. Discounts for things like enrolling in automatic payments, insuring more than one car, going paperless, and of course, being a safe driver. Plus, customers who bundle their auto with home or add renter's insurance save an average of 12% on their auto. There are so many ways to save when you switch. And once you're a customer with Progressive, you get unmatched claim service with 24/7 support online or by phone. It's no wonder why more than 20 million drivers trust Progressive and why they've recently climbed to the third largest auto insurer in the country. Get a quote online at progressive.com in as little as 5 minutes and see how much you could be saving. Auto insurance from Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Home and renter's insurance not available in all states. Provided and serviced by affiliated and third-party issuers. Discounts vary and are not available in all states and situations.
Susan Shoemake was raped and murdered at Southern Illinois University while on her way to work. The investigators had their eye on two suspects, a man named Daniel Woolison, an ex-convict, and a man named John Paul Phillips, who had served time previously for kidnapping. Woolison worked less than a mile from where Susan was murdered, and the police found evidence that appeared to connect him to the crime scene. However, while he was incarcerated for a parole violation, two additional women were raped and attacked. Phillips was a suspect in those cases and found guilty, leading the investigators to believe he was also the person who had raped and attacked Susan.
I'm slowing down here because right here in front of us, you'll see another pedestrian overpass. This is known as the Susan Shoemake Memorial Overpass.
In the summer of 1981, Paul Eccles was a rookie cop when 21-year-old Susan Shoemake was raped and murdered.
This room here contains all our major case evidence. This box on this shelf here is the evidence collected in the Susan Shoemake murder from 1981.
20 years later, the case remains officially unsolved. Unofficially, many believe the murder was the work of local serial killer John Paul Phillips.
Initially, my peers, or those that were my supervisors in those years, certainly felt that John Paul Phillips was responsible for Shoemake just because of the fact that he was a killer. He was proven to be a killer, and he'd worked within 300 or 400 yards of the crime scene.
By 2001, DNA testing is solving cases and can hopefully confirm the suspicions of original investigators regarding Susan Shoemake's murder.
Everybody knew that he was capable and that he was in the area, and some of them had the opinion if John Paul Phillips was anywhere in the area and somebody was murdered, a female specifically, then he probably did it.
Forensic testing isolates a male DNA profile from the Shoemake evidence. Phillips, however, died in prison 8 years earlier. To get his DNA, detectives must make a trip to the graveyard.
Well, the immediate thought was the only way we're going to be able to do this is actually exhume him.
In October of 2001, the remains of a serial killer are exhumed. The DNA results are not what most expected.
They compared it to the unknown male profile in the Susan Shoemake case and found that the two did not match. So we essentially eliminated John Paul Phillips.
With Phillips cleared, Eccles returns to the case file.
I went into the case and I tried to find three primary suspects. Start with three, work with three, and then move on to another three. And my intent was to go until we eliminated those suspects.
Included on the suspect list, an ex-con named Daniel Woolison.
When you read the case file, Daniel Woolison does stick out.
Woolison first surfaced as a suspect in 1981 after his bag was found near the murder scene. Now he's living in Detroit. Eccles reaches out to the Washtenaw County Sheriff for a little help.
This is the auto salvage yard where I was told Mr. Woolison worked at, and this is where I had my first contact with him.
Mike Downey is a detective with the Washtenaw County Sheriff's Department. On August 29th, he pays Woolison a visit.
Originally, when I came up the driveway there, he was curious as to why I wanted to talk to him. And then once I explained to him why I was here, and I was here on behalf of the Carbondale Police Department, that's when he got nervous, and his hands started to shake. He wouldn't keep eye contact with me anymore, and he wasn't interested in what I had to say anymore.
Downey asks Woolison for a sample of his DNA. Woolison refuses. Detective Downey, however, has a plan.
The plan was to set up surveillance on Mr. Woolison in order to obtain a cigarette butt to compare it with Carbondale sample.
We're going to do it surreptitiously. Hopefully, we would follow him. Woolison would be driving. We knew he smoked cigarettes. Maybe he would throw a cigarette butt out the window and we'd retrieve the cigarette butt and then take it to the forensic lab for analysis.
Lieutenant Richard Hayward runs the surveillance operation.
For the first few days, we conducted surveillance of the salvage yard that he worked at, hoping to get him to leave and follow him and hopefully obtain a DNA sample. However, that was unsuccessful.
A couple weeks later, Hayward learns that Willison had recently sold his car. Investigators track the vehicle to its new owner in Detroit.
And during my interview with him, I asked him if there were any cigarette butts in the car. He stated yes, and I asked him if he smoked or were the cigarette butts in the car when he bought it. He said they were in the car when he bought them.
Hayward suspects the butts might belong to Willison and sends them to the Michigan State Police Crime Lab for DNA testing.
And it was on September 9th of 2004, I get a phone call in the morning. He says, look, I have the results of those four cigarette butts. I pull out the Susan Shoemate DNA report that has the unknown DNA profile. It has all the genetic codes there, and I compare it back and forth, and voila, there it is. I have the same DNA profile.
The Illinois Crime Lab confirms the match, and Paul Eccles heads to Michigan to pick up Willison and charge him with the murder of Susan Shoemake.
I could see the stress in his eyes. I mean, he was giving me the signs that you would typically see in a person that was guilty. He knew he was had. He knew that that day had finally arrived, the day that he had dreaded for so many years and hoped that would never arrive. He knew that that was the day.
I go back to a description of him in the pre-sentence report.
Michael Wepsick prosecutes Daniel Willison for murder.
A friend or neighbor called him a Jekyll and Hyde type of individual. And we saw very much the Dr. Jekyll part of his personality throughout the proceedings. He was very polite, answered the judge, yes, sir, no, sir. As his attorney said, a model client. And there is a deep, dark side to his heart. Yeah, I could see him as a murderer.
In March of 2006, Willison is found guilty of murder in the first degree and sentenced to 40 years. Under Illinois law, at the time the crime was committed, he could be out in as little as 18. It's a fact that doesn't sit well with prosecutors or Susan Shoemake's family.
Susan Shoemake was just barely 21 years of age when she died. It's been almost 25 years since her murder. Daniel Willison will spend less time in prison than Susan was alive and less time than she has been dead. And that's really unfair. That's really unfair.
You have to ask yourself, what is a woman's life worth? You know, if the guy gets 40 years, that means he's out in 20. I think it would be a good question for a lot of women. Is that what your life is worth? That's what their life is worth in the state of Illinois.
Daniel Willison is now 60 years old and continuing to serve time in an Illinois prison. He'll be eligible for parole on November 17th, 2024. Cold Case Files, the podcast, is hosted by Brooke Giddings, produced by McKamey Lynn and Steve Delamater. Our associate producer is Julie Magruder. Our executive producer is Ted Butler. Our music was created by Blake Maples. This podcast is distributed by Podcast One. The Cold Case Files TV series was produced by Curtis Productions and is hosted by Bill Curtis. You can find me at Brooke Giddings on Twitter and at Brooke the Podcaster on Instagram. I'm also active in the Facebook group Podcast for Justice. Check out more Cold Case Files at aetv.com or learn more about cases like this one by visiting the A&E Real Crime blog at aetv.com/realcrime.